Let's see.
Oh, new month. It's February.
It is a new month.
Wait, what day is it?
No, it will be. Yes.
Yeah, it's not today.
Out of practice. Threw me off.
What day is Groundhog? Is Groundhog's Day?
The 2nd. February 2nd.
Yesterday was Groundhog's Day.
Yes.
Did
Groundhogs. I think it's Groundhog Day. It's not multiple groundhogs.
It's possessive. It is the day that belongs to the groundhog.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's just Groundhog Day.
We'll look this up. There's no way of knowing. It's
everybody it's get unknowable. Your calendars out.
Nobody get your calendars out.
Is there an S on the end of Groundhog?
An apostrophe S, not just one. All right. Welcome back to Beyond Sunday. This is Pastor David Bowser with me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
And not with us,
Patrick.
Yeah, still not back, but we're back. This is our first recording since like, God, November.
we are so out of practice. So
it's been a while, yeah. Stay with us. We're a little rusty, but we're going to get some oil on the joints and we're going to be ready to go.
Like sometimes these are the most exciting podcasts, the ones where we're like really... technically off our game.
Sometimes they are. Let's see if that plays out today. We'll see what happens.
No promises. So
Patrick will be with us again very soon. We're anticipating his return next week. He has been home enjoying life with his son, who we haven't talked about on the podcast yet. So Benjamin is in the world. Welcome, Benjamin.
Good job Patrick remembering will be here. The name.
We have his baptism coming up, so I've been practicing.
You've been practicing, baby names are super hard to remember.
No,
I think.
Legit.
It's a whole new person.
I've never
You've literally never met before.
And I don't recognize that face. Literally every baby looks the same. Come on.
Yeah, it's true.
There's like no fit. And they keep changing clothes, the little rascals.
Like 4 times a day.
Come on. Can't remember your name. I don't have time for this. Anyway, welcome to the world, Benjamin. Congratulations, Patrick and Kat. We're looking forward to having Patrick back, but we are here today.
Yeah, to fumble through it on our own.
Yeah, we're going to make it. We're bringing you a brand new episode on the Bible because it's a new month. So brand new episode, brand new month. Welcome back to the party.
Here and I mean, the amount that we struggled to come up with a Bible topic for a Bible podcast was
You don't have to tell people that.
I mean, just for a little peek behind the curtain.
in our defense, we haven't had to think about a topic for 2 months.
I have not thought about the Bible in...
Well, that's not
kidding.
What I said. That's
just kidding. I think about the Bible.
Every day.
All the time.
Almost as much as I think about the Roman Empire.
Right. For me, it's ancient Egypt.
Ancient Egypt. Okay, there you go.
Yeah. We've already talked about this. Our listeners know this.
Yeah. Our diehard fans.
Know this.
All right. Well, Elise, do you have a news story for us?
I do have a news story.
All right. What do we got?
You've
got 2 months worth that you could have had stored up.
True. You know, it was hard to find funny news that was really funny and not like
depressing.
Sad funny.
Yeah, sure.
But this one feels a little personal. A man has been arrested in a UK cheese heist where an imposter stole $389,000 worth of cheddar.
Of cheddar?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know that American cheddar is not necessarily to the standards of...
It's not the same thing.
Right. It's not the same.
I learned that.
So I imagine that British cheddar costs more than my, $2 bag of cheese that I get at the HEB, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm imagining $398,000 worth of $2 bags of cheese.
Right. Well, apparently this was many tons worth of cheese.
Okay, but it is still,
it's
still a lot of tons.
Still, I mean, $389,000.
That's a lot of dollars that he stole
cheese. Okay. And this has been significant enough amongst artisan cheesemakers in the UK. I love this whole story.
Love that.
They've named it. It is called the Cheese Heist of 2024.
Well, what else would you call it?
It has a hyperlink. You can go to its Wikipedia page. The Cheese Heist of 2024.
Has the culprit been identified?
Yeah, 63-year-old man.
Wow.
So they don't give you his name here. I guess they're protecting his identity until they actually prove that he did this.
Those Brits.
Not very American.
No kidding. You are guilty until proven that we don't care about you anymore.
This 63-year-old man. I think he had an accomplice, which they maybe have not gotten yet, but he stole tens of thousands of pounds of of high value cheddar.
Okay. I like that because cheddar is also a name for money. So
it's right. It's pretty funny. And cheddar. This article is written by NPR and they use
that.
A lot. This is top tier journalism.
Yeah,
they use a lot of cheese puns throughout.
Yep. Fabulous.
See if I can find one here.
You've got to believe it.
They're better than that.
Aww.
There's one about Gouda in here somewhere. Really, you should
have a really Gouda time.
Right. So
it was a breeze.
I shouldn't have told you that cheese puns were on the table. oh, it's called Great Cheese Heist.
Oh, the Great Cheese Heist.
One of their subheadings, the Great Cheese Heist.
Of 2024.
The massive loss for London's Neal's Yard Dairy.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah, so over 950 wheels.
Wow.
Which is over 22 metric tons.
Holy cow, okay.
Of Half-Odd, Westcombe, and Pitchfork Cheddar.
I don't know what any of those things mean. But
yeah, three different artisans across England and Wales make these. between them, these cheeses have won numerous awards and are amongst the most sought-after artisan cheeses in the UK.
Sure. I love it.
The crime cuts deep.
Oh, there it is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. because cheddar originated in Somerset, England, in a town by the same name. And so it's a source of national pride.
Sure, because cheddar came from cheddar. Yep.
Apparently, there's only a small handful of real cheddar cheesemakers in the world, and these three are some of those.
Okay. What are we eating when we eat cheddar cheese?
Apparently not, like, officially cheddar.
Sure. Is this, like, one of those things where, like, it has to be in cheddar in order to be called cheddar?
Maybe, like, champagne. Yeah. And otherwise, so it's just a sparkling brie.
Yeah, you're eating the same thing, but it's not allowed to. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yep. So, apparently, they want us to be on the lookout for suspiciously low-priced artisanal cheddar, because that might be...
So, they found the guy, but they didn't find the cheese.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did he, like, sell it off? Like, black market?
Yeah, that's what they're thinking. But they think that he was targeting Russia and China, because they have lower cheese standards.
So, he's, like, trying to flood their markets with this really good artisanal cheese?
Nobody will ask questions about why it doesn't have labels on the... Oh, on the fancy cheese. Yeah, I didn't know that cheese was such a contentious topic. Yeah.
I got to tell you, of the things I'm going to be like considering buying on a black market, cheese is pretty far down the list.
I know. Well, the spokesperson statement right here says that, all right, he believes they might be trying to sell it in the Middle East or Russia because people won't ask questions there.
Sure.
And I think if they tried to sell it closer to home, they'd find it very difficult because the international artisan community is very connected.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I've literally never once asked questions about whether my cheese was black market. So.
Well, that's because you're buying the little bag of free shredded cheddar like I am.
Oh, you don't know my life. I might be buying Whole Wheels.
Are you?
No.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like my guess was pretty spot on.
Oh, well, so they have offered an answer to the many everyday cheese lovers who have been... just banging on the doors asking how they can help.
Sure. How can we help? What can we do?
Is continue to support British and Irish cheese.
Okay.
So buy
British cheese.
Yes. Okay. And Irish cheese.
Irish cheese. Okay. What is it? Is there something special about Irish cheese?
Maybe it also falls under the umbrella of cheddar.
Is it made with Guinness?
Yeah. Beer cheese. Some of it is. There's
I could go
beer
for some
cheese.
Beer cheese. I could go for that. That sounds delightful.
It does.
Okay. Well, good luck to our friends across the pond and their... artisan cheesemakers. may you recover your losses. We will be watching the black market for
we're taking this very seriously.
We're very concerned.
Yeah.
Oh goodness. Well, we are back again, and we're back in the Bible because it's a brand new month.
We are back in the Bible.
You might not remember this because it's been a long time.
Me? I might not remember.
Yeah, you might not remember this. It's been a long time.
You're assuming a lot.
I think I'm accurate. But we actually recorded a Weird Characters of the Bible episode.
I remember that.
Yep. And then what you might not know is that actually came out last month in real time. So that we're actually doing 2 months of Weird Characters in the Bible in a row.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Listeners.
Look at us planning ahead. Definitely was not just a coincidence that happened. So we've got a few more weird characters that Elise and I have kind of been scouting out from our biblical texts as we've been. Sitting back and relaxing over these past 2 months, we've just been scouring the pages saying, what are the new weird characters that we can come up with?
Doctorate level research, indeed.
Yeah, I mean, some doctorates out there are super easy, so I'm sure that this fits that level of research.
Yeah. You don't have a doctorate.
No, I do not have a doctorate.
Yeah, so you don't know if they're easy or not.
But like, I'm sure there are like ones out, like you get that honorary doctorate, like you don't have to do
anything
for that.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything.
That's the level of research I've got. Yeah. I've got honorary doctorate level research.
From the University of Phoenix.
Yep, exactly. Somehow I feel like even a real doctorate from the University of Phoenix would be easier than like other doctorates. Does that seem fair?
Yeah. I mean, it's a for-profit university that's been kind of busted. So fair.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that like doctorates are easy. I know doctorates are very hard, to be clear.
He's not coming after doctorates.
But not all of them are created equal. Let's just let's just own that where it is. Okay. So do you want to go first or do you want me to lead off? What do you want to do?
Maybe we should flip-flop. So like I'll do one of mine and you do one of yours.
Well, yeah, I assume. But who's going to go first? One of us has
okay.
to
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay, there we go.
And I'm going to obviously lean on you a little bit for these because you...
Oh, I got you.
You don't have a doctorate, but you went to school for this.
I did go to school. I have a Master of Divinity.
Ugh, how long... Like, how often do you try to work that into conversation?
Not nearly often
David
enough.
David Bowser, like, Harvard. Like,
I did not go to Harvard.
David Bowser, Master of Divinity.
I give Master of Divinity amongst, like, degree titles. It's up there as far as, like, coolest title.
It does,
like,
sound really cool. You know, Master of Divinity.
Yeah, thunder, lightning, bolts, whole nine yards. I have mastered divinity. That's it. Right? It's,
no ego problems.
None.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially not because that's what most pastors have. So we definitely don't have ego problems with that.
Yeah. That's another podcast episode.
Ego problems among pastors?
Ego problems amongst pastors.
That's a whole series right there.
Yeah. Maybe you should be absent for that one.
Spinoff. Hey, I'll be the first to talk about my own ego. It's fine. I'm very comfortable with the level of ego I display. I once got described by a classmate as the cockiest humble guy they knew. Anyway. Because I make jokes like that.
But right.
Anyway. All right, what do you got? You got our first character.
So I do. So I'm going to actually start with the in my opinion, the Ooh. Least weird of the two that I picked.
Okay, all right.
What do you know about Hosea?
Let's see. Hosea was a prophet.
He was.
Has a whole book. And I know some of his story, but I want to let you kind of jump in and tell us the story, because I think that's going to give away what's a little odd about Hosea, shall we say?
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of prophets, he was actually active for a pretty long time, right?
Yeah.
So his, I guess, call it active period as a prophet spans about 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a whole life in this community. And
we're going to hear about it.
Yeah. Hitting the same themes kind of over and over mm-hmm. again throughout it.
It's one of the minor prophets. Mm-hmm. That just means that it's a shorter book.
Right.
One of the things people forget is that minor and major prophets do not mean more or less important.
Just, right.
It's
right.
purely length.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, 13, 15 chapters. Mm-hmm. There's some really fascinating stuff in here. So what do you got? What's strange about Hosea?
So Hosea married a woman on purpose who he knew was not going to be faithful to him.
Yeah.
And like that was kind of the goal for him, it seems, was like, on purpose, I'm going to marry somebody. She was a prostitute. And like, I don't think he had any illusions that she was going to be faithful to
him. My recollection is that God tells him to marry this person.
Right.
Yes. So God gives this instruction, Hosea, you're going to go marry this prostitute, mm-hmm. right? And then his whole life basically becomes performance art.
Yes. Yes. And so like he knows going in kind of what he's signing up for.
She's not going to be faithful.
Right.
I know it.
Right. And like this is going to be used to prove a point about Israel and interestingly enough, not about infidelity or sexual sin, but Mm-mm. Israel and ungratefulness and idolatry.
the relationship between Israel and God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, like Hosea, has remained faithful and loving to this prostitute that is Israel who continues
to throw their lot in with other
gods and whatnot. Yeah. It's a fascinating story.
Yeah.
But Hosea is a character. I'm like, dude, you are committed to the process. I gotta give you that.
So they had three children and he named his kids things like not my people and
in Hebrew
forsaken.
So it sounds cooler in Hebrew, but
right, but like they knew what that meant, you know, they were with Hebrews. Can you imagine like going to school?
What's your name? Not my people.
Right.
Forsaken. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. So
is that like four and then middle name Saken? Is that, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. Last name Hosea. I don't know what Hosea's last name was.
Yeah. I don't even know if they did last names.
Yeah, they did family names. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Son of so-and-so. Yeah. That was
That's cumbersome.
It was a lot, but so was Hosea's life. So there you go.
It does seem like it was cumbersome.
I will say, like, you know, there's some scholarly debate, right? I mean, there's scholarly debate about everything, and so there's some scholarly debate about was this all actually just performance art? Like, was it all just performative? But you know, I think this is a place where we can look at the scripture and say, nah, this probably is legit. Like, this probably was a person who was a prophet on God's behalf and lived this life. And so a couple things to take away from that is certainly the message that God is trying to convey about Israel's own unfaithfulness and how that leads us to needing Jesus, et cetera, right? But from our perspective, too, the commitment of the prophet to proclaiming what God has given, the message God has given them, even when it's like literally costing him his love and happiness.
Right.
You have to be married to this person who is going to be unfaithful to you for the rest of your life because I have this call from you. And I don't think that's going to be most of our calls. I don't think that's normally how God speaks. It's the only time that God speaks that way in scripture. So I think that's a good sign for us.
But. Interestingly, I was reading that Hosea is really not referenced again in the rest of the Bible.
No, it's not.
Like maybe one time in the New Testament, like just a little blip, which is unusual because many of the prophets are referenced kind of over and over.
Yeah, again. It's not a a book where we get a lot of scriptural like callbacks, right?
Right.
Yeah. Either by name or by like just a here's a nod to that thing that Hosea said. Yeah.
It seems like even the other biblical authors are like, yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
We don't want to talk about it.
And listen, when you're too much, even for like Ezekiel, you're like, oof, buddy. Yeah. All right. This is a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Hosea. I love it.
Yep.
I'm going to give you a dealer's choice here. Do you want to go Old Testament or New Testament first for mine? Because I got one of each.
Let's do New Testament because that'll be the only one that we have in the New Testament.
Only New Testament. Okay. So
we're a little bit better behaved in the New Testament.
Well, and there are just fewer characters, right? Like, you know, because you get all of Paul's letters and stuff like that. And then just the character appeal is not as great there.
I should have done Paul as a weird character.
I just thought of a guy I should have done that I forgot about. Oh, shucks.
Well, freebie. Do it.
Oh, so there's a guy. I'm not going to remember where it is. In the book of Acts. His name is Eutychus.
Eutychus.
And he is sitting listening to one of Paul's sermons. Uh-huh. And Paul is preaching for a real long time. And it gets late into the night. And the room that they're in is hot. And he falls asleep and falls out of a window and dies.
Oh, no.
And Paul walks down, brings Eutychus back to life, goes back upstairs, and keeps on preaching.
Boy, no big deal. Yeah. Intermission.
It's fine. I'm just going to bring up a guy back to life, and I'm going to keep preaching. It's totally legit. So anyway, that's a freebie. That's just for you. But we're also in the book of Acts with this one.
Okay.
And this is, I was going back and forth on whether this is weird characters or weird stories, and I think this is odd characters in a weird story. So okay. I'm going to go ahead and count it for this.
Okay.
So this is a couple.
Oh, so you got a woman.
I do.
Good for you. We have not had
it's
any
not
weird
a
women.
Great look for the women on this particular story. I'm going to go ahead and preface that.
Right.
So this is the story of Ananias and Sapphira.
I was just talking about them last night.
Really?
Not
okay.
Weird?
In what context were you talking about Ananias and Sapphira? So what brought about Ananias and Sapphira in your life?
Oh,
that's not like a typical dinner conversation.
It's not, is it? No, it was trying to think about... I can't even remember, but it was like how we were talking about how the lessons that we take from things in the Bible are frequently like not the ones that maybe we're meant to take.
I think this is a great story to symbolize that idea of we take something away from it that maybe was not the intention.
Oh, we're talking about being unequally yoked. So like that idea of being unequally yoked, which like growing up to me was always like, you know, don't marry an atheist, you know, or something. It was like, you know, you want to make sure that you have like the exact same beliefs on everything. And, you know, as an adult, I've realized that there are a lot of really beautiful relationships that have some differences in beliefs, right? And it is much more about like how you are as people and supportive of one another than it is about having the same feelings about everything. And so I was thinking about like, what does that actually mean to be like unequally yoked? That's like, again, a blip in the Bible that we get, right? Mm-hmm. That statement. And that led me to Ananias and Sapphira, who I think were in fact equally yoked.
Yeah, they were committed, as we're going to hear. They were in it together.
Yeah.
All right, so let's give you some backstory. So this is Acts chapter 5. Mm-hmm. It's the beginning of the church, right? So Jesus crucified, spoiler alert, raised from the dead. Mm-hmm. And the church is like, okay, well, what does this mean? How are we going to do this? And so they start holding all things in common, and they start praying every day in the temple and all this other stuff. And so then we get to Acts chapter 5. And we hear, this is Acts chapter 5, verse 1. A man named Ananias, with the consent of his wife Sapphira, sold a piece of property. And with his wife's knowledge, he kept back some of the proceeds and brought only a part and laid it at the apostles' feet. So from the outset, Sapphira in it, right?
Yeah.
Equally yoked.
All the way
they
in.
Are committed to this process.
Yeah.
And on its face, like, you know, sometimes people will point to this and say, oh, see, if you don't give everything over to God, then this is what's going to happen. We're going to tell you what's going to happen in a minute because that's where the story gets weird. But I don't think it's about giving everything to God. I think it's about the the honesty and mm-hmm. versus deceit. So Ananias brings this money forward, and Peter is there and says, you're lying to me. This is not everything that you sold the land for. And Ananias drops dead. Not great.
Boom.
And then Ananias is carried out. And a couple hours later, Sapphira comes in, doesn't know that Ananias is dead, but knows everything that happened. So Peter says, how much did you sell the land for? And she says, whatever the number is that he told he was going to give the church. Mm-hmm. And Peter's like, you're lying. And she also drops dead.
Yep.
So a very weird story, but I think it's much more about the what are we telling ourselves? How are we lying to ourselves versus the, oh, you have to give everything or you're going to drop dead. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the point. The point is not that they should have sold the land and given everything automatically. The point is that they needed to be honest about what they were doing with the proceeds. Because even at the end, Peter will say, while it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, were not the proceeds at your disposal? How is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? You did not lie to us, but to God. So it's not about like, God demands all of this, or I, Peter, demand all of this. It's that you just lied about it. Like, you came in here and you're like, oh, this is all everything that I sold. And you want to like to get this big praise and celebration for doing it. And instead it's like, oh, look, you're just being deceitful again.
Yeah. And like the appearance of do-gooding and charity and trying to get the praise for something that you've done when you haven't really done that thing.
Oh, yeah. Does that sound familiar?
Slippery.
No. I've never had anybody do anything like that. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
So there's Ananias and Sapphira. I don't know. They themselves, maybe not so weird, but a weird story.
It is a weird story.
And one worthy of our consideration, because it's not what we think it is on its surface, but it is definitely out there. Also, don't lie to the church. Apparently that's not going to go well for you.
A bad move, yeah.
All right, what do you got? What's number two?
Oh, so for me, I went with Samson.
Samson. Back in Judges. We had a lot of judges last time.
Well, the Judges are weird.
Judges is a weird book. That is absolutely true. Right. I'm 100% with you on that one. I mean, great stuff, really important, but crazy
stuff.
Like
a fun read.
Yeah, crazy
for
stuff.
For sure, yeah.
Game of Thrones style, you want Judges.
Yeah, I think Samson is arguably way weirder than Hosea.
Okay, all right.
Well, like some of the stuff that like is kind of just mentioned offhand here is like, what?
Yeah.
Like
there's a lot of throwaways that like if you're out of the cultural context, you're like, what?
Right, exactly. Like he ostensibly kind of pranked a whole city by removing their city gates and carrying them to the top of a hill.
Yeah, I think that one's fun. Yeah,
for reasons. So if you're unfamiliar with Samson, he was a super strong guy, one of the judges.
Do you know why he was super strong?
Because of his Nazarite vow,
yeah,
supposedly. Yeah. So this a whole thing where his mom was visited by an angel, very mm-hmm. similar to later on. And told that he was going to be basically set apart because of this thing called a Nazarite vow, which meant basically he was abstaining from strong drink and cutting his hair.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was another one in there too.
No, I think that's right. Those are the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
This actually comes from the book of Numbers. I stumbled upon it today, but there's a little section in Numbers where it says, this is what's going to mean if you're a Nazarite. And they're like these. So it's kind of like if we think of like a Franciscan or Dominican monk today, mm-hmm. where it's like anybody can be a member of Israel, right? Anybody can be a Catholic, but if you're going to like take this vow, you're going to have certain extra things that you're going to do on top of it. Right. That's kind of what the Nazarite was.
So kind of that, apparently his vows did not extend to celibacy from what we see.
<Did not. laughs>
So his thing was his hair. Mm-hmm.
His hair was the source of his strength.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm not sure exactly how representative that's supposed to be versus how literal, but there is this whole thing at the end where this woman,
Delilah,
cuts his hair.
Snip, snip.
Yeah, and then he loses his strength and gets captured by the Philistines and his eyeballs gouged out and all that.
But then his hair grows back.
And then he like pulls the temple down on top of him, which is pretty cool. Cool way to go out.
Yep.
But he slays a lion with his bare hands.
As you do.
Doesn't tell anybody about it because why would you? Really cool guys don't look at explosions or talk about the lions that they slay with their bare hands.
Exactly.
Then it turns it into a riddle for some reason because he finds honey growing inside of the carcass when he walks back past it later. And because he's a freak, he eats it. Dead
honey.
Animal honey.
Yeah. That's artisanal dead animal honey.
Right.
That's how you make cheddar cheese, actually, is artisanal dead animal honey.
Right. It's not cheddar if it didn't appear inside of a lion carcass.
The secret recipe. It's right out there.
He waged war on the Philistines by tying 300 foxes together by the tail and lighting them on fire. I see maybe one fox a year, and I get super excited about it. I think we can go ahead and say that the Gaza area where this was happening had a real fox problem.
Not anymore.
If he was able to just come by 300 foxes for his side project, you know? And like, how long did that take him to like capture these
running around? Here, foxes, buddy, come here, fox. Come here.
Kitty, kitty.
I have no idea.
He tied their tails together. So 150 pairs of foxes.
Yeah.
It was a bad day for the foxes.
Also a bad day for the Philistines. Yeah.
Bad day for everybody but Samson.
Yeah.
So he did that. And then he also, there's this whole thing where he he massacres 1,000 people with the fresh jawbone of a donkey.
Yep.
So.
It's a vicious weapon. You get the donkey jawbone. Right. Yeah. And a
fresh one. So
yeah. Still bloody.
Right.
Let that sink in, folks.
Yeah. Thoroughly weird story.
Yeah, there have been movies made about this. There have been songs written about it. The love between alleged love between Samson and Delilah. Delilah being the one who tricks him, lures him in with her love, and then cuts his hair while he sleeps. I think she actually gives him a strong drink too. Like I think he breaks his vow. I don't remember exactly how that happens. But it's a fascinating story. Samson, along with a lot of the other judges. Very strange.
Crazy. Yeah.
That's a good one. Thanks for thanks for that little trip down memory lane. I forgot the fox thing. Oh, the fox one's that's great.
Yeah.
All right, I got one more, and admittedly not as fun as Samson. So feeling like we should have changed up the order.
I'm sorry.
But that's okay. This is a good one. So this comes from the book of Job.
Another weird one.
Job is a pretty weird book. For those who don't remember, Job starts out with God and Satan hanging out in the heavenly realms, and Satan just walks up to God's throne and is like, I bet I can get Job to like be mad at you. And God's like, no way, Job loves me so much.
You don't want to be too good at your job because this is what happens.
Exactly. And Satan's like, yeah, Job only loves you because you've given him everything you want. So let me take stuff away. And God's like, fine, you can take all the stuff away, but don't touch his life. And then he comes back and like, you can do it again, but you still can't kill him. And so Job like has a day, right? Like Job's flocks all die. Job's children die because they're throwing a party and the house collapses on them. Job gets boils all over his body, like all sorts of nasty stuff. And so the book of Job, the rest of the book, this is all the first chapter, mind you, like this it's like 10 verses where
heavy
all this
hitting
happens.
Up front. Yeah.
The rest of the book of Job is Job sitting in a pile of ashes and Job's friends coming, and they all argue about whether or not Job deserved this or not. That's the remainder
real
of the
friends
book. Yes. And so it's basically a theological reflection on why do bad things happen to good people, like that's the whole extent of the book of Job, which is fascinating in and of itself. But so Job primarily is having this conversation with three of his friends, and Job keeps coming back, I didn't do anything wrong, I didn't deserve this. And each of his friends are like, well maybe you did this. And finally his three friends are like, fine, we can find no fault with you, you're right, you didn't deserve this, God is unjust. That's kind of what the three friends land on. You're right, God is unjust. And then there's this other guy who's been silent the entire time. His name is Elihu. And you don't even know he's there, but he pops up in chapter 33, and he says, listen up, I have been quiet this whole time because I'm younger than you, and I thought your old gray beards would have wisdom. He basically says this, right? I thought your old gray beards would have wisdom, but now I'm listening to you, and you're all a bunch of idiots. Let me tell you how it's going to be. And Elihu launches into this thing, and he like rebukes Job. He's like, clearly, if this happened, then something must be wrong. And he stands up for God and says, God is always just. God has to be just. And it's this, it's like four chapters long. It's much longer than any of the other individual responses. You know, collectively, they say a lot more, but it's like this block. And then from his block, we go straight into God showing up. And so there's this interesting connection between, one, this young outsider who's kind of stepping up into this role to say, this is what God is supposed to be about. God has to be just. And that's the thing that actually brings about God's presence. Now, there's lots of stuff that I don't know that we actually agree with. Like, I think there are things that Elihu says are wrong, right? I you know, there's ostensibly nothing to say that Job was actually wrong, right? But there is this stance of God has to be just, right? There, we have to understand that God is just in some, even when we don't comprehend it, even when we don't know how it's working. And it's just a fascinating, like, little interjection here where we get this young guy and he's the one who points out, no, God has to be just. Whereas we, even now, right, typically dismiss the voices of younger generations who are pointing to justice or who are pointing to something else. But in this particular case, that voice gets lifted up, and that's what causes God to show up. And then God shows up and God like lays in, is like, listen,
you all wrong.
Were any of you there when I created the heavens and the earth? No.
Right.
Can any of you like call the Leviathan out of existence? Like, no, you cannot do that. Yeah, right. God has some pretty sweet lines at the end of Job.
As you one would hope.
Yeah. You know, for God's big appearance, right?
Right.
Yeah. So that's so that's Elihu, who I kind of, you know, I'd forgotten about, but I really love that part of Job.
Yeah.
Job's a good book in general, but it's a little weighty.
Not uplifting,
and not an easy read, right?
Because
there's a lot of repetition, and there's a lot of like stuff said in Hebrew poetry form, and you're like, wait, we'll read that five times, and then you'll maybe comprehend it. So, but it's good, and it's worth checking out. So that's Elihu.
Good job on the obscure one.
Thank you.
Well done.
Yeah, I do what I can.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there we go. We're back at it.
Another
podcast completed. Good work, team.
Yep.
It's a brand new year for us. Our first episode of 2025. Lots of stuff has happened since we recorded a podcast. I was listening to some of our ones that have been coming out, and we kept like talking about like, yeah, whatever kind of world it is, right? And now we're here.
It's whatever kind of world.
This is the world that we're in now. And so I think a brand new year will have lots of opportunities for interesting topics and thinking about what it means to be Christian in this world, to be followers of Jesus in a world where that is in some cases being condemned or even seen as anti-American or other things of the sort, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's just lots of opportunity for us to have some interesting conversation. We're glad to have you all with us again in 2025. We hope that you'll keep with us here in the new year as well.
Yeah.
You got anything else you want to add? I feel like I was on a bit of a rant.
No, that's great. That's great. So let's see. Patrick usually does this part.
Oh, no, hold on. I got to do all this stuff. So if you liked this episode, you can send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. I think that's still our email address. I'll have to go look. and you can find all of our episodes, including those ones that we recorded in advance for the last 2 months at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.